Hello, and welcome to Media Ministry at Holden Village. Today's date is August 5th, 2004. Today's session number is SCG-2004-02. The speakers for today are Shauna Hannon and Greg Schaefer. And the lesson for today is, what kind of leaders does the Church of the 21st Century need? Let's listen in.
Consider to be your primary vocations in your life.
Okay. My name is Randy, and I live in La Crescent, Minnesota. And I went to Luther College, and then went on. I got a master's in public health and a master's in Christian lay ministry, and I'm a candidate for diaconal ministry, and feel called to end of life. Like in hospice. That's where I'm at today.
I'm Dorothy Satry, and trained as an elementary teacher first, and then got my master's in learning disabilities. Taught for about 12 years, along with raising four kids. And then when Roy was called to be assistant to the bishop in southeastern Minnesota Synod, we moved to Rochester, and I decided not to check into a teaching situation at that time until we saw what his work was going to be, and we only had a year and a half of college to continue supporting. So I started first volunteering and then worked also in the Synod office. One of the most enjoyable parts of that is been coordinating the first call theological education program for the Synod.
Huh. Come on in.
Is this where politics is?
No, it's next door.
It's right next door.
There could be a little politics mixed in, actually. Yeah. I don't know, but.
So between, and now, I guess the vocation of, in retirement is volunteering and being grandparents, visiting kids and traveling.
Cool. We'll come back to here. We'll just
okay, thanks. This way.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm 111. The longer you live, the longer you have to talk to say about tell about yourself.
Yeah,
but anyway, I'm not sure where to what to put out. Anyway, we have four grown children and 11 grandchildren, and I, at this point, have a bookstore, which has been my mission in life, because it's not a Christian bookstore, but it has a lot of Christian stuff. So it's not like it doesn't say Christian bookstore over the front of it. And so that has taken up a lot of my time, and I have had hospice training, and I have had Stephen's ministry training. Which I have, my bookstore has a lot of resources that go toward that, and a lot of the nature, environmental materials. And I'm not really very active in the church right now. Because, for one thing, everybody there wants to keep everything the way it's always been. Mm-hmm. So, where are you from? Where do you live?
Gutenberg, Iowa.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, Gutenberg, but you say Gutenberg.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. It's spelled like Gutenberg, right?
I'll say it's called
Gutenberg. Two T's though. Oh. Gutenberg had one?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But it's been called that many times. So.
Okay.
It's spelled B-E-R-G.
Okay.
Is it? I think B-E-R-G.
Village versus mountain.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right?
Yeah, it's the opposite of what the Gutenberg is.
I
can't remember how to spell it.
Okay.
And I have Russell Walden and Russell Walden. Gutenberg, son of the Mississippi River. And I'm a Luther graduate, as Juanita is, and I have a master's at University of Northern Iowa in counseling, and I got a PhD from Iowa in school administration, so I've been involved. I've been a school administrator now for many years, retired, and do a lot of volunteer work. Plus work for her sometimes in the bookstore. And I've been on the church council, many years ago I was, but I get terrible church politics. That's the worst kind, sometimes.
Is that why we separated? We have church in this room and politics.
I think that's it.
Nice thick wall, whatever.
And I can remember right up my pastor, when I was growing up, encouraged me to go to the ministry. I sure thought about off and on many times, but I just didn't do it. And what a counselor or my advisor Luther said I should, he was in education, so I should become a principal. He said, you can do this like ministry there. Huh. So I followed it, and as well as a school superintendent.
Oh, great. You also have a, you
said
you had a master's in
counseling? I've got a master's in counseling.
Thank you.
So this is a review of our role in our local church?
Oh, basically. Not necessarily, but it's been nice that people have mentioned that as part of their vocations. Your name, where you're from, and sort of just a general idea of what you think you've been called to and what you've done to respond to that.
All right. Well, I'm from Chippewa Falls, Wisconsin. That's 90 miles east of the Twin Cities. Been active ever since I can remember, as a kid and as an adult and as a parent. And at our congregation about 8 years ago, we switched from the church. This is an experiment we've had. We let go of the traditional Sunday school and we went to whole family education on Sunday morning. To remedy the situation where car doors open up, kids come out, and parents magically appear an hour later, and then they go home. And we lost members who wanted that, and it still comes up. And we were looking for whole family education and multi-generation. And it started out quite strong, and I'm not in the inner circle, but it's dwindled down to the point that, well, what happens in our town is, on Wednesday the schools have agreed to no homework, so all our kids go from school right to church every Wednesday right after school. Mm-hmm. Have you guys heard of this?
No. Yeah, I have that where I serve the parish. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's still remarkable.
Yeah, and it's great. The kids get fed and they play games and they get a craft and they get their religious education. So I thought it was always really great, but also at our church we have a few of us who always are on all the committees, and we have tons of new members. Mm-hmm. We don't see them. We don't see them on Sunday morning. We see their kids after school on Wednesday night. And when they're asked to be on a committee, my speculation is they are two career couples and they're maxed out. Their kids are in tons of activities. And challenges.
Right.
Probably everyone in here can relate to a lot of that.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, I feel sorry for the parents nowadays. Wait. Their lives are, whether they have to be, it takes a lot to not have their white lives get that way. They have to say, no, we aren't going to do everything we're supposed to do.
Well, we'll introduce ourselves, and then I think what I want to do is a sort of a starting question. I guess it's secondary because we've already had a question on the table. It's a sort of, is to play off of what you've just said there, I think, but why don't we introduce ourselves?
I'm Greg Schaefer. I'm the Director of Admissions at Pacific Lutheran Seminary in Burnsville.
And I'm Shauna Hannon. I work at Luther Seminary in St. Paul, Minnesota. And the question we want to ask now, I'll repeat it again, is what does the church need? What do you think the church needs in the in its leaders in the 21st century? So given what you've just said in particular about parents and sort of busyness, things like that, that's just one aspect. What kind of leaders do you think requires sort of organizing or helping to help to prioritize it? Bring out good in a life with a lot of opportunity. What kind of leaders would be able to do that, do you think? So as you think of your own situation, if you could say, oh, I wish we would have this kind of person, what would that look like? And we're not going to go and create this person necessarily and give that to you, but kind of curious, because at seminaries we need to know what do we need to do? How do we need to prepare? What's going on out there? And so, can you answer that?
I get torn between, you know, first I want to say a leader needs to be really flexible and creative. And yet, I also believe that worship time or in the church is one place that there can be stability that there isn't in other places. So I'm still not sure which way I think is more important. You know, I think we know from experience that the seekers, you know, we do have to have flexibility in our worship structure, music, a variety of music, things like that. I don't think we'll get anywhere by just staying with only the traditional LBW or whatever. But there's something about, you know, if we just become another form of entertainment and another multi-tech kind of spot,
yeah,
is that going to help?
Right.
The prioritizing.
Right.
I think in rural churches, in rural markets, which so much of it is in the Midwest anyway, it's hard to, because many times they're losing population. General, and you know, school population going out, there aren't not as many children anymore, and so they become very difficult for a lot of individual churches to do anything. Some of them just barely, but they don't want to give it up. So it takes a lot of special people, pastors in a way, that can handle it, because it, many times they're going up there, two, three, four parishes, and then they've got to be really creative as how they bring all that together and make that operate without abandoning three of the four churches, for example.
Right. Say more about what that creativity might look like. You know, I mean, if we just had a job description, creative people needed because there are three or four parishes. I mean, what does that look like?
Well,
more?
In our situation, we have two ELC churches in our town. We have a town of about 2,000, which, you know, it's kind of holding its own population-wise.
Mm-hmm.
But there's two other rural churches that become part of. So we have, end up now, it's four separate churches, but we have two pastors for the four.
Mm-hmm.
And they're working that out. And I think it's working out, or it's working better than people thought it was. There was some resistance at first.
Mm-hmm.
So that they don't have to be, they have a little bit more. Yeah, it's not like they have a lot to handle, but with two for the four, it's working out better, I think.
Did they do it like a combined youth ministry and maybe you teach together on confirmation? Or
I think they tried to do that,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's what's being done with our...
Mm-hmm. But then we've also talked about how good it would be to have a youth minister, ecumenical youth minister.
Interesting.
And then you have kids who, their friends, would, no matter what church they went to, they'd all, could all be.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be good for the youth. It'd be good for everybody.
I think the way that we do ministry, which is kind of needs to be explored, and I guess why I say that is, going to seminary, I didn't see many classes on teaching pastors about how to help identify spiritual gifts in the laity and affirming the spiritual gifts that we each have. And one thing I've found in parish nursing is all you have to do is just give affirmation for whatever gift somebody has. If it's sending get well cards, if it's sending and identifying all of those as ministry, and I don't think we do a very good job of identifying that we're all ministers.
Yep.
And that we all have spiritual God-given gifts, and then to affirm those, and then giving permission to use those gifts, and not. And so here again, giving the pastor support, because she will develop an entire flock to go forth. And I also think that we don't always identify the mission opportunities in our backyard. Somehow we think mission is far away. And we have abuse and homeless in our backyard. And we kind of talked about that earlier about how the greatest sin is to turn inward, and how to turn outward into our backyard, versus always thinking we have to send to Ethiopia. And we do need to do that, but we need to our neighbors right next door. So I think it needs to be transformational right now, so much. And again, ecumenical, I think, is very important. And but I guess what I would like to see in seminaries is pastors having to go through spiritual direction so they understand what that is, and also then so that they are able to help be spiritual directors, which is much different than pastoral counseling.
Just to, at the very end, you talked about pastors in particular, but you started talking, you sort of broke the ice a little bit by mentioning youth ministers. I mean, the question isn't just what do we want in pastors, but in leaders.
Right.
I think that's one of the major points, that developing the skills and the gifts of lay and ordained leaders, I mean, is very key, in particular at this time, I think. And it's kind of coming out here, so.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, and to look at the different models of laity, and knowing their call,
right.
And that the pastor isn't just called, that we're all called.
Yeah.
And using the laity more in leadership roles. And how do we train them, the laity, so they don't have to go to seminary or whatever, but that we then bring it into the synods, and we have like lady schools where we bring maybe the professors into the synod. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Instead of sending them to some, have some classes, some part of teaching how to be lay ministers.
Mm-hmm.
What's the question?
is the latecomer, sorry.
What are the characteristics of leaders that you think we need in the church in the 21st century? And you're welcome to join us in the front or back.
Oh,
there is
thanks.
Fine too.
Yeah, but just listening in.
Yeah,
that's fine. Thank you.
Good.
I don't know what's been already spoken of and things, but I guess one of the things that that I yearn for, and that seems that I hear others yearn for, not as much in the church, but in my neighborhood outside of the church, mm-hmm. is the kind of authentic leadership that can grapple with the tradition, not only be faithful to the tradition, but grapple with the tradition. I thought it was just absolutely fascinating, the whole phenomenon that started last summer with the Da Vinci Code.
Huh.
And I had people in my neighborhood who knew what I did for a living. and I work in the church. Say, you know, so what do you think of these questions, Madeline? You're part of the church. And it turns out it was people who had been raised in the church, but who, you know, had, you know, and those were kind of, there were some radical questions, and yet there was, I think the whole thing of like, you know, especially around, the suggestion.
it's been so long ago since I read the Da Vinci Code, I can't remember it myself anymore, but the whole thing of, you know, was the canon closure with some things left out because, you know, was it more political than, you know, and are there questions of faith that it's okay to ask? And I remember my daughter-in-law, who was not raised in the church and is not part of the church, but was a religious studies major in college, went from reading the Da Vinci Code to reading Elaine Pagels, the Gnostic Gospels, and the Gospel of Thomas, and John Spong, and Marcus Borg, and was just reading all this stuff. And then we were having conversations, and she said, I can't believe you think the way you do, or that you can live with those kinds of questions when you're inside the church. And I said, well, I think there's lots of people who do. But she said, well, maybe it's okay to have those kinds of questions if you're already in, but I don't know that I can come in with these kinds of questions. And I think as I talk to clergy and other leaders, I find oftentimes that personally they live those questions, but they would never dare to project those questions in their teaching or preaching, or you know, maybe even in pastoral care. And so people who are outside the faith think that the church is not a place for people with questions. Hmm. Serious questions.
When you say those kind of questions, like I
struggling with, you know, well, some of the questions that you know that Marcus Borg deals with in terms of the resurrection of Jesus, the feminine divine. I mean, there's just all kinds of really pushing the envelope kinds of questions about the faith and orthodoxy within the faith versus kind of the stretch.
Maybe not being afraid to be a little bit academic with the faith. Is that kind of what you're saying? Not being afraid to be a little bit academic.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's a strange mix between the academic and the questions of the heart and the yearnings of the heart. I think it's this strange meeting place of theology and spirituality that there's a Presbyterian church in Denver that advertises on NPR, and their tagline is for the spiritually hungry but institutionally suspicious.
Huh.
And I would guess that I bet it grabs the attention of a lot of people.
Right.
So I don't know. I guess so. Leaders who can live in that tension and deal with those kinds of questions, and yet are grounded in the tradition, but also maybe have walked their own journey of questioning, grappling, stepping outside it from now time to time.
It's an
authenticity, I guess.
Oh, that's a key word. That's good. I also heard, too, that somebody who's unfamiliar, kind of looking in, I think leaders who can create a space or make it look from inside out, that we're open to those kind of questions, too.
Yeah.
And that's a real gift, to be able to create something that is an invitation.
Yeah. So then we become a church that's willing to have an honest struggle with questions like homosexuality. And that it is an honest struggle, despite what some people think.
Right.
So having it a safe place to come, safe, making it safe.
Mm-hmm. And again, I think I hear that as much. Well, I hear it within the church too, but I hear it in people who just can't.
Yeah.
And it's 20-somethings, early 30s. Where I do that amongst my neighbors.
Good. Good. Well, I think we have a start of a list, and I think we could go on listing things, but part of what we want to do is just say, okay, how are we going to find these people?
Yeah.
You know, it's one thing to talk about. What do we need in these leaders? And I guess there are two things. Are they out there and we find them? Or are there some people with some of these things And we expect that we can sort of, or we hope that we can kind of create or nourish, draw out some of these other things. If so, how do we do that? That's maybe the, those are the subsequent questions in all of this. When we think kind of, if these are some of the things that we want, how do we get them? And one of the ways I think we can get at that is just by having you think of your, I mean, how have you gotten to where you are now? What have been those elements in the community with individuals, a community of people, experiences, events that have shaped you to get to this point? I think that's important, because when we think, how did we get here? That's how we need to be thinking. How do we get other people to get somewhere? So if anybody's willing to share, I mean, how did you, what were those key, who were those key people or communities of people or experiences or events that got you to a point of your vocation or recognizing and living out your vocation?
Well, I think it is, however it happens, coming in contact with key people that somehow either directly became your mentor, or they got you turned on to something, or got you excited about something, or you just kind of had a great deal of respect for them, or whatever they do, whatever it is in life, and it kind of maybe got you excited and started looking into it. I think that there's a lot of it.
You were one who mentioned in your opening statements a couple of people in particular. One person who said you should think about the ministry, and another person who said if you go into education, that can be just as much a ministry. And you mentioned that community of people in your introductory comments.
And this pastor who I had, who was tremendous, this was in a small northeastern Iowa town, not where we live now, but he came as a kid. He just had a knack for meeting with anybody at any level. I mean, he just drew people. He, you know, if he saw somebody that didn't go to church, or he'd meet him on the golf course, or go out fishing with him, or, you know, anybody. I mean, all kinds of people gravitated towards him. Mm-hmm. He started coming to church. Mm-hmm. He's a special person. He eventually became a bishop. Hmm.
It sounds like some of what you were saying about spiritual gifts. I mean, somebody who has a I mean, can you learn that, drawing out of people sort of their gifts? And that's a little bit connected. Other key people events,
this like Stuart Briscoe. I don't think they know Stuart Briscoe or not, but anyway, he and his wife, his wife's name is Jill, they went out even into the pubs.
Mm-hmm. In England.
Uh-huh. And met people, and not just sit in the church waiting for them to come.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know.
That's a good point. Thanks, Greg, for writing this down.
Yeah.
Collecting our thoughts.
Now, I'm thinking about, like, we're very ecumenical. Of course, we have four children, and they all belong to different churches. Plus, I grew up Methodist. Mm-hmm. So I think the main thing is that we realize that Jesus is our Savior, and he doesn't belong, doesn't matter what, you can't put him in a box.
No.
So you can't be so protective of your own box.
Right.
You have to be willing to be open to sharing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good.
Other than you find pastors who won't share, I mean, that's a bad example.
Right.
To anybody who's looking on.
So in your own experience, did you experience growing up people who were open to sharing that? Did you have those key people around you? Or any particular events where that happened, where there was some space to do that?
It was just, life just came along and took me. I had no direction, no plans, no nothing, no guidance counselors, no nothing.
Huh?
No parents who had ever been to college.
How did you get to having a bookstore, or recognizing that desire to have a bookstore?
Well, I didn't start that until I was 62.
How did you get there, though? I mean, at 15 or
so? Well,
it took a little longer.
We both loved books, and we didn't have anything like that in our town, and that just, it was kind of my, something I wanted to offer and make available, and it wasn't because anyone was going to make it. Anyone was going to make a lot of money.
It sounds like you saw the need, and that you had the gifts, and that's the calling.
Yeah.
where we meet our gifts when we get that deep, joyful experience.
That's our Frederick Buechner quote. That's from the opening video at Holden here, too. That's on there.
And it's so true, though, but you recognized a need, and then you let your gifts meet that need.
Yeah. Good. How about others of you? Key events that helped you get to this point, or maybe another point in your life, or key people?
I had there was a school superintendent, maybe you know Ron Bickford, was down at Danville.
Yeah.
For a number of years.
Yeah, I know.
When Roy was called to West Burlington, it was a time our youngest son David was just going into kindergarten, and I was going to get back into teaching, and did some substituting, and it happened to be the year that Iowa legislature said the next fall every school had to have a learning disabilities program. Of course, they forgot to check to see if there were any teachers trained. but it was Mr. Bickford who said to me, "Have you ever thought of specializing?" Because at that time there weren't that many openings for just an elementary teacher. And so it was his encouragement, you know, would I want to go back, and you could, you know, get a temporary certificate by just getting the program started and so forth, which led me back to school and on to something like that. But good, definitely was a,
so that's a key person,
a door opener.
You remember.
Key person.
Yeah. Any others?
All along the way, it's been people who, I think, done two things. One, suggested that I might want to consider something, and then kind of given me the tools, the means to do that, I guess, you know. But really, I mean, an invitation. Recognizing gifts in people and making the suggestion even a more direct, you ought to do this. You know, have you considered, I could imagine you doing this.
Mm-hmm. Good.
My upbringing was in the United Church of Christ. And that was a very liberal, permissive church. As far as homosexuality, as the women in the pulpit, never even was a debate in my, you know, growing up. Mm-hmm. So that, I think, that liberal upbringing really started, it has had a huge effect on me as far as justice and social issues. But as far as discernment to where I have been now. My pastors would just like leave little notes under my door when
really?
Parishioners, you know, encircle this program, and you know, they wouldn't tell me to go or anything.
But they wanted you to know about
it. Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. And so, yeah, that gave some affirmation then. And at first I said, how could I possibly go to seminary, you know? A 3-hour commute. And when I thought about it, I guess I just did it. So my congregation supported that. But I don't know, I think I've always just been a discerning person, just asking questions. And all my friends said, oh, you're so spiritual. I mean, all over and over. And I'm like, what does that mean?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Spiritual. And so. But I just think, I can't really say, I guess, just that.
You did say, kind of quickly, but you did say, and my congregation supported that, and, I think that support of a larger community, too, there, mm-hmm. individuals, this pastor was putting notes under your door.
Yeah.
It required something that took time and energy away from what you were doing there, but this whole community supported that. I think that's key.
And you know, they gave them not a lot of money, but they then rallied and started to Well, it's made them start thinking we need to develop leaders. Our congregation has never had a leader, and we're 44 years old, go to seminary. Isn't that, that's bad. I mean, that is really, so it got them thinking we need to do endowments. We need to start giving that support and financially giving that support.
Yeah.
And so I did not receive much, but the next person that will go through will have a huge support from the they're going to like sponsor, they're saying it.
Interesting, yeah.
And we'll sponsor anybody to go, mm-hmm. you know.
Similar to Madeline saying someone suggested I should do this and then provided tools and means
yeah.
to do that. You know, if you have children and you say, go and build a fence.
Yeah.
What in the world does that do? You've got to show them where maybe the fence could be built. You've got to show them the tools. You've got to show them how the tools work. So it's not just suggesting it, it's getting the tools and means, and that's part of it, the financial support.
Well, so it's been, you know, a different, it's the same thing, but different little pieces of how to do it along the way. When I grew up in a relatively small town and in a small Missouri Synod congregation that, other than the pastor, didn't have any paid staff, and so everything was volunteer staff, you know. And when I was 13, the woman who had been organist for years moved away, and I played piano, and it was, you know, they would never look at hiring outside, but it was like, okay, well, who's going to be the next organist? So, and it's like, suggested that I would, and that they would pay, help support my organ lessons, you know, and for years I was the organist, and all I got was $100 savings for Christmas every year, but it was, you know, that kind of encouragement, I'm old, and people do things like that more, but other times too, much later in my life when I had been, someone suggested to me that I should consider a job when I went to churchwide staff, and said, and I would be happy, I would write a letter of recommendation for you, it was my bishop at the time.
Huh.
So not just suggesting you do that, but
yeah,
you could, I would recommend and support you in that. So it's not just saying, you know, do it and then just throwing you out.
Right.
It's saying, I'll walk with you on a journey or
right. Very key.
Yeah.
That's just a question. Yeah.
In my church, we call that equipping, and I am the director of equipping.
Oh,
equipping with saints for the church, and it's about the priesthood of the believers, and it's about utilizing everyone's gifts. And that model briefly describes an interview, which is a discovery opportunity to kind of get an idea of what gifts and you know, what interests person might have, and then a preparation portion where you would kind of determine a placement for them in terms of what ministry you would think would be good for them to serve in, and then an actual placement and then kind of a follow-up. But once you have people serving in their gifts like that, you'll then have leaders begin to arise out of those ministries within the group of themselves. So the unity and the fellowship that comes, that's birthed from the group.
Yeah.
In terms of, I just might comment, in terms of the how you find leaders in the churches in today's age, they say make wide ramps of opportunity so that you are encouraging all people who have any interest to serve. Don't limit that just to leaders or elders or people who are, you know, make your criteria a church member, that type of thing.
Yeah.
But wide ramps of opportunity allow, you know, allow all people who have been invited to come to participate. And then from within there, you'll see the leaders arise. And then you'll be able to mentor them, like you've all said. You've all had shared examples of being mentored, and I too, that's my story. Someone gave me the opportunity to serve, recognized my gifts, and has begun to develop them from there. So I would, you know, so we all know about the mentoring process, mm-hmm. And then we too then begin to mentor someone underneath ourselves, and that then will develop this, you know. So that's what I have to share.
Excellent. That's cool.
Equipping.
Director of equipping.
That's the new, that's, you know, the church is, God builds our church up through the equipping and the priesthood of the saints. So you say, where are we going to find these people? Well, they're usually right there.
Yeah.
Yes. God has them right there. He's given them to you. And right. Often, and a lot, one of you said the invitation, that's the eight critical point right there. And usually it's a personal invitation.
Yes.
You know, it's, you can stand at the pulpit and say, well, our, you know, our hospitality committee needs help for Sunday coffee or whatever. But when you get on the phone and personally invite three people to come and say, I'd like to invite you to serve in this ministry, maybe something that will work for you, maybe not, but if you give it a, you know, if you try for a little while, and then if there's something else you find yourself interested in. But it really has, you have to develop that, because the people will come in, they will serve for a lifetime, they will then move out of those places of serving. But unless you continually develop it, you don't have new people coming in. So it has to be an intentional process. And our church, we have a very young congregation, so we recognize that. Also, that when you plug people in, that's where in the small groups and in the fellowship, and that's, you know, where the faith is nurtured. Mm-hmm.
Or did you get your training so that you knew how to do that?
Well, and that's another point you guys touched on. It's hard to do that within your own churches because you don't have the resources. So they send us out. Leadership is, there are different programs that are offered in the area that we would go to as leadership training. Training Network, LTN, Leadership Training Network 1, that type of thing. But I'm from New York, so the opportunities on the East Coast are a lot, I would say a lot more available to me than they would be maybe to the Midwest or the West Coast.
But you didn't have to travel far.
Well, no, sometimes, but not, we went to Texas for one, but that was an exception. No, you didn't have to travel far.
Mm-hmm. So they kind of brought it in, and then brought
But if you know, those were outside of your denomination too. You know, that's the other thing. If you want to keep it within the Lutheran, you know, you'd have to develop your own programs in order to, and collectively decide what kind of leadership training you wanted to provide. You know, these are just very general, all denomination leadership training. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Tell us your name.
Oh, my name is Marie Phillipson.
Marie, and you're from where on the East Coast?
I live in New Jersey, on the Jersey Shore.
Okay. Where?
Well, let's see, currently I'm in Neptune. I don't know how familiar you are with the area.
I live in Beechwood.
Oh, is that right? Well, Beechwood has a little bit over Neptune. very good. So, well, you might also, I don't know if you attend a Lutheran church in Jersey, but... So you would also see that the availability of those types of training is a little more available to us.
And that's the other thing, it has to be available. Yeah. I mean, like, distance learning has helped. But that training has to be available.
Right.
And inviting.
Right, and then when you see people that have those leadership abilities within your congregation, and you say, well, I'd like to send, you know, you pick three or four, and then you invite them to participate and begin to develop that, you know.
I don't know if it's all related, but when you talk about equipping, the Spanish word that sounds like equipping is equipo,
okay,
which is a word that means team. Mm-hmm. You play on a baseball team, it's an equipo de baseball. And it's just, I think that's exactly it. You have this picture of community, this team, equipping. And we have these stories in literature and in the media, in like television and drama and things like that, all over the place. Watch for that to see how that equipping is taking place. What you've done for us is actually combine these two lists. I mean, here are these things that we see we maybe need as we head into this next phase in the church. And then here's what got you to your place, to your vocation. So
how do we have that happen? And the funny thing is about our job in admissions, we run around the country and crash parties all over the place. I mean, that's what we do. And we have these conversations, and we try to get people to have these conversations then in their own locations. And the reason is, people might say, oh, you're recruiters. You know, we're not recruiters because we're not in the midst of the congregation. Mm-hmm. You know who's mm-hmm. right in front of you. Right. Just like you said, often right. you don't have to go out and find them because right. they're right there. You touched on that key thing. So how, right there, are you going to set in place these things that draw out those things of people? And you've started naming that. But let's just take these last, we really only have about 10 more minutes, I think, these last about 10 minutes or so to think through if you already have things in place that where mentors are specifically saying you should think about ministry, whatever that means, as a pastor, as a youth leader, as a director of equipping, and then dream. This isn't something we have right now, but I can imagine this. Let's do that in the next 10 minutes. Do you have something already in place? Are you imagining right now how something can be done?
Well, we've done, in our synod, big invitation to service events and where people uh-huh. are invited, and then at those events have been, you know, where the group participates in not only Bible study and stuff about call and mm-hmm. stuff like that, but having a wide variety of leaders present so that people see that there are opportunities in the life of the church besides being a pastor, but even with pastors, having a variety of kinds of pastors, mm-hmm. people who serve in a variety of settings, people who've been missionaries, people in large parishes and suburban parishes and urban parishes and rural parishes, you know, so mm-hmm. the wide range of, because sometimes people have a very limited yeah. experience of what a pastor mm-hmm. or what kind of leader is based on their, if they've always been in the same congregation their whole life, and maybe there's been a long time, mm-hmm. so they only have one model, right. just opening up the variety of models, but people in the congregation suggesting to people that they should attend, mm-hmm. you know, encouraging them to attend an event like that.
Yeah.
Encouraging people to go, when I meet with people who are kind of, have any inkling of discerning a call to ministry, I connect them with a whole variety of people around yeah. that I think would be good for them to talk to. Especially if it's people who say, you know, but I want to have family, and how can I do this and have family, and the, you know, so I'll connect them with somebody who's done it and has a family, or who That's didn't cool. think they could move to go to seminary and talk to somebody who figured out how to do that and family survived, or you know, whatever the obstacles that people see, to introduce them to people who mm-hmm. saw those same obstacles but found a way.
That's good.
I went out to one of the sisters, our sisters, Lutheran sisters, lived out east.
Gladwin, Pennsylvania.
Where?
Gladwin, Pennsylvania.
Yes. They offered a whole weekend of discernment for $25. Yeah. And I went out and lived with the sisters, and what they did, they did inventories for, you know, you took these inventories.
Personal assessment?
Yeah, yeah, and they're your gifts. And mine was pet minister, and I was just amazed that was my gift. This was probably 10 years ago. It wasn't pastor. It was ministry. And so then I spent the time with the sisters discerning that, and I came out of there just on fire. Mm-hmm. But here again, how can we have opportunities like that for $25
mm-hmm. yeah.
to send and say, and to do some spiritual discernment, figuring out what your gifts are and having that dialogue? I just think that's key.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know of any place now, or I don't even know if the sisters in their Chicago now. I don't even know.
There is a deaconess retreat for discernment. Well, this year maybe they didn't have
it.
I don't know if they had it this year, but the seminaries have programs like that, not necessarily for a week, but I think probably all of us things in one way or another, do things like that.
Yeah, we not only have it on our campuses, sometimes specifically focused, the specific focus might be college-age students, and maybe another time specifically for like second, third career people. Like Madeline says, you're hooking people up in sort of similar contexts to remove those obstacles. But that's also what we do.
California Lutheran has a big event.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. Yes. Which is happening now?
About
yeah. now. Yeah, this week, right now, in fact.
But that's what we do, too. The eight ELCA seminaries have admissions directors, associate directors of admissions. And that's what we do. We travel around, and if a synod says, we want you to do a discernment event, if they don't already have that, or if few congregations get together and say, we think we've got a large group of people, and we want to do that. We want to have Bible study, we want to do personal gift assessment, we want to have conversation with what exactly would it look like to go to seminary. That's what we travel around the country doing. Together, all eight seminaries.
Do you think we know that? I didn't know that.
The thing that's difficult is, you know, numerous conversations with, let's say, for example, a particular congregation or a synod office may yield nothing. Because it's just, because there's a lot going on, number one. And number two, it takes kind of a personal meeting and maybe even a second one and sort of some saying, no, this might really be important. But it takes some key people. We actually had a key conversation at Good Earth Village in southeastern Minnesota about exactly this. What is going on? How are we going to do this? So it's happening. But it takes people in your individual places to be asking around, your colleagues, your synod staff, what are we doing about this? And if something is missing, saying, now what can we do? And I'm willing to participate in putting something together. If it seems that key, and if you need a resource, that's where we come in.
Okay.
So in the last few years, we've been trying to really offer ourselves to do that.
Yeah, it can be done, you know, even on an individual basis. We have a lay school of theology in our synod, and it's right there in Rochester. And so when that comes out, I usually make sure, you know, that a couple of people in our congregation that, not necessarily that they should be going to seminary, but take advantage of the lay school just for information. But sometimes it amazes me, and then I have to step back and just be thankful for all the opportunities I've had for making connections with people and knowing about these things.
Mm-hmm.
It amazes me sometimes how little our members of our congregation know about opportunities and what is going on. But it's a big job in a congregation to make sure the information that comes to the office gets to who needs it.
And it has to, you have to say it like a bajillion times, right here in the
mouth. Well, how do you find out about it? We live right, you know, right next to Warford Center. I never hear about it, never heard of anything before.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Is that up to us to find out, or does the seminary?
I think there's a responsibility for both. If it's interesting to you and if it seems important, head to their website. We have a website for all of our seminaries, lutheran-seminaries.org, where we're all on there, a link to our websites, and then link to possibilities. But it's also, we take it on as our responsibility to say, here are some opportunities. We want to let you know about this. We want you to know what resources are there, and we want you to know that we can be a resource for you. So I think
part
it works
of it
both
is,
ways.
It's also, I just think there's a huge communication challenge, and a lot of it is, you know, those events get publicized and it doesn't get past the pastor's desk.
Yeah.
For the people to know.
Yeah.
In the same way, you know, things that come to the synod office, you know, we now do weekly email kind of things with notifications about things, which is helping to get a much wider audience. But I think this whole systemic thing question is, how does the whole church care about the next generation of leaders? I mean, just, and it's not just identifying people with gifts and suggesting that they go to seminary, but how do we support our pastors and diaconal ministers, associates in ministry, people who work in a variety of ministries in the church, once they're there, are they supported in ministry? Are they adequately paid? Are they encouraged to do continuing education and take a decent vacation? And so a lot of people, I mean, I think it's a systemic thing of how we not only raise up leaders, but encourage, support, and nurture them once they're there.
Right.
Because otherwise people will say, why would anybody want to do that?
Yeah.
I've had two conversations just this week of people coming up and saying, oh, you work at the seminary. Oh. They're like, what does that mean? You know what I mean? And so I asked, what does that mean? And twice people have said, you know what, I know people with gifts, but why in the world do I want to say to them right now? And that requires asking, well, what's your role in your own situation for making that? Why are people frustrated? What's going on there? I think that's very key. But we can't wait for one of those things to happen and the other. I mean, it's got to happen.
It's all works
together.
I just think if we could just have, for getting our leaders, we need to remove all barriers. We need to ask, what is the barriers from you? Have we asked those questions? What are the barriers?
Yeah, good question. What's keeping you from
doing right, because once you remove the barriers, and maybe it's driving, maybe it's transformation, maybe it's finances, maybe it's insecure that they can do this. Where is their support going to come from? But I don't know if we've asked that question.
Hmm. That's a good question.
And then, so I don't know if we'll find out the answers until we ask the right questions. And that's what I sometimes get frustrated. I think we ask questions, but are they the right questions? I don't know.
Good point. I'm noticing the time. We're going to have about 2 minutes, and I want to say that I want to do a quick quiz.
Okay.
And then after, well, I'll do the quick quiz sort of last. Maybe Greg can do the quick quiz because he's got a great way of mapping out the United States. But there's some material here. Let me just say that so many people that we interview and talk to who come to the seminary, and maybe they are second or third career people, they say, I knew when I was like, I think the average is 10 years old, I wanted to lead in the church in one way. But nobody really ever sort of invited me to that. It requires, do you consider this. Boy, you're good at this. Have you ever thought of being a leader in the church in whatever way? I mean, make that your sort of personal and beyond that community task to go and equip and to say, consider this. Very key. That's the only reason I'm here. My pastor said, I want you to do this, and I'm setting up a visit to the seminary for you next week. That's it. I mean, it was that forward. And I'm like, ooh, ooh. You know, and you go and you're naive. You don't need your ducks in order immediately, but take some of these materials and hand them to people. If you know of somebody and you think our conversation with them might be helpful, we're glad to be a resource in that way. But let this kind of live on when you head back to your own congregations and synods. I think that's very key.
I make one real quick follow-up on anyone for you that are pastors and have large congregations. Look to your ministry leaders to tell you who is serving under them, where they might see people that exhibit the gifts.
Yeah, exactly.
Because you aren't going to get to touch everybody in your congregation, but your leaders of the ministries are, and they're going to know those people more personally. So be intentional about asking them, who do you see that
excellent
shows those
excellent. Very good. Greg, quiz, and then we're here for Saturday, so let's have a conversation or ask questions or whatever. Okay, see what I mean? Greg's got to do this, not me.
I don't know what Texas looks like. We're going to say it looks like that.
Pretty good.